kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing today?
All right. I'm here. That's about as good as it gets.
Yeah. Yay. That is as good as it gets anymore. As you can hear from the giggling, we are being joined by two guests today. Would you all like to introduce yourselves so I don't butcher any names?
Sure. I'm Sean Hantani, and I am one half of Analgesic Productions.
And I'm Marina Kitaka.
The other half of Analgesic Productions.
I would have destroyed those names. I guarantee I would have destroyed those names.
That's okay. I thought it was a good idea to let us say them.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Usually they get destroyed.
No, our.
But how are you two doing today?
Doing all right.
Yeah.
A little less rainy than it's been. It's been really rainy here.
Where are you from?
Yeah. I'm currently living in Minneapolis.
Has it been hot recently, too? In Chicago,
it's been hot. There was a weird day where it was, like, in the 90s, but then since then, it's just been, like, lots and lots of rain and thunderstorms.
I see. It's cloudy in Chicago. Last night was clear, but it was, like, as hot as, like, Taiwan. It was weird.
How hot does Taiwan get?
Pretty hot. I mean, I don't think it really goes over 100 that much, but it's always really humid and rainy during the summer.
Humidity sucks.
Yeah.
I have curly hair. Humidity is my, like, my nemesis in life.
The frizzies.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
For a redheaded chick, I can get a full-on fro if it's humid enough. It's just everywhere.
The whole one.
That reminds me, there's, like, a character like that in Anodyne. Frizzy red-haired character in a humid area.
Yeah. I commiserated with that character. I was like, mi familia.
That's good.
Anyway, you bring up Anodyne. We should probably talk about that. You are the creators of Anodyne, just released on PlayStation and Xbox. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch.
Anodyne is an adventure where you play as a person named Young and explore their inner dream world and try to help save this mysterious Briar from this entity called the Darkness. And throughout it, you explore abstract and urban and strange natural spaces and talk to a variety of weird characters while fighting through Game Boy Zelda-esque dungeons.
Which, in my opinion, is the best Zelda.
Yeah,
I think I agree.
I don't have an opinion on that because I didn't get to play the Game Boy Zelda.
I played through Oracle of Seasons and Link's Awakening recently, and they're both nice, but I think they show their age. I was actually pretty surprised how much Anodyne kind of like improved on them in some ways, but in other ways were different. To toot my own horn.
There are a lot of comparisons between Anodyne and Link's Awakening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Anodyne's a bit weirder. I was playing... Wait, Marine, have you played Link's Awakening recently?
Yeah, I played through most of it recently.
Okay. Yeah, it's not as weird as I had been imagining it to be. It's definitely got, like, an interesting tone to it, but a lot of the time it's kind of, like, playful and jokey, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With like a few moments of very strange stuff.
A lot of things feel weirder when you're like a child and you like half don't understand what's going on.
Right. There's like a moment in Link's Awakening where you like sleep in a bed and enter this like weird shrine of these creepy looking like clay doll monsters. That was really weird as a kid, but now it's just like, oh,
I forgot about that part in the game.
Yeah, that part is wild.
Yeah.
Anodyne, on the other hand, has a much more surreal aesthetic to it.
Right.
Yeah, right off the bat.
It pulls no punches. It's just like, okay, this is your situation. Good luck.
Have fun.
Yeah, good luck at DLHF. Yeah. There's going to be a patch, and you're going to have Sage starting off with TLHF.
Yeah, it was a fun game to work on because we could kind of just do whatever, and it would just make sense within the context of it not making sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's set up to be very, like, loose and surreal, so you could kind of just... Like, there was some, like, thought process to putting the areas together, but a lot of it was kind of just like the first or second idea that we had, and then we did it.
Well, where did the idea for the game come from?
Early on, I think I was in college, and I had just released a really interesting platformer called Inspiration Dave. It's a really funny game. You should look it up after the show.
Inspiration Dave.
You should play this. While listening to the show, if you're listening to the audience. Anyways, I think I just wanted to make, like, a kind of Zelda-style game with, like, surreal kind of interior thoughts, themes, with a creepy aesthetic, and I just went from there. And that's kind of how it started. And then a few months later, I met Marina, and she helped to flesh out the world more and give it, like, more structure.
So what are the roles that the two of you played in the game?
Sean
came up with, like, the idea and the, like, initial kind of general structure of the game, and then did programming and music and sound, and then I came on to do art. And as I was kind of, like, starting to be a part of the project, I started, like, bouncing ideas off Sean for, like, dialogue and characters. And so I ended up doing, like, writing and then art. Sean did most of the, like, dungeon level design. And I feel like I did some of the kind of overworld map design.
Yeah. The big field place was you.
Yeah.
And probably more. I can't really remember.
Yeah, some of the, like, bigger nature-y areas.
Oh, like the forest, I think.
Yeah, because they're, like, kind of tied into the art.
Yeah.
You guys went with the 16-bit retro aesthetic for this. Were there any special challenges, or was that just kind of like, this is the only style that's going to fit this game and make it feel right? Or were there times where you're like, oh my gosh, maybe we should have done something different?
It started out because it was simpler for me, because when I was making the game on my own, I can't really draw, so... Fewer pixels means fewer drawing, right? Huh? No, not necessarily. But that's where the limitation came from. I've made
pixel art. I know that's wrong.
it made some things quicker. I think it was a smart choice because when every screen is only 160 pixels wide and tall, that's kind of like less art you have to make, sort of. I mean, it's better than, like, having to hand paint every single screen. So I think that ended up being a good decision.
Yeah, I think it also helps from, like, a design perspective, I think. Having these, like, little spaces kind of limits your options and makes little ideas maybe easier to come up with. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it worked out well for me too, because I had kind of as a hobby sort of done pixel art in the past, and so it was pretty natural fit.
You mentioned the 160 by 160 pixel format. What made you guys go with the square screen format instead of adapting it to a more widescreen format?
That was actually my misinterpretation of the Game Boy. I actually, for the past, I think, 5 years, I thought that that's what the resolution of, like, Link's Awakening was, but I think it's actually, like, 11 by 8 or 11 by 7 tiles or something. The Game Boy screen might be square, is it? I don't know.
Maybe, but, I mean, it might be square, but then, like, it's different than Anodyne, because Anodyne has the square and then the, like, UI on top of it.
Yeah, the UI thingy.
Whereas in, like, Link's Awakening... The play area is not square because the UI cuts into it.
Yeah, it's like a rectangular. I was surprised how much they managed to fit. I'm looking up a picture because I need to know. I used to, I'm surprised I just haven't flat out memorized this. Link's Awakening is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10 by 8. 10 yeah. by 8 tiles for the yeah. gameplay area. And then the UI extends, it looks like an extra 20 pixels. Yeah, that's pretty tight.
Yeah, that's not a lot of space. We in our current game that we're working on, there are 2D sections that are kind of similar pixel art, small square screen. But we recently decided to expand it by a couple tiles to just have a little more room for different ideas and art.
I'm going to send a screenshot on it. If it shows on Twitch, it's fine. I think it's just, it's like a bonus. to show what we mean. Oops. Okay. You can keep talking now.
Yeah, although in the new game, we kind of are taking advantage of the widescreen format because there's like a UI that extends around it. And so there's kind of a visual framing device that shows like your health and different things.
And what is the game that you're working on now? Is it the sequel?
Yeah, we're making Anodyne 2 Return to Dust. And it's pretty exciting. It's sort of a loosely related... Oh, yeah, I think Sean...
I just posted a picture of the UI.
Posted a picture of the UI in the chat and a screenshot of our game that we're working on.
It's a little bit wider.
Nice.
Yeah, so the way that this game is structured is that you start out in a like 3D world. It's kind of like low poly, like PlayStation 1 era sort of 3D. And you have this character and this story in this 3D world, and you're collecting dust and you're trying to go around to different characters in the world. And then you can shrink inside them and clean dust out of them to try to like help them. Hmm. Is that Sean? That's really loud keyboard.
Oh, sorry.
yeah, so when you shrink inside people, that's when it goes into the 2D, and that's where like the main like level designing puzzle-y stuff is. And then the 3D is more kind of like moving around and exploring kind of like the parts of Shadow of the Colossus, like in between the Colossi.
Yeah, oh, wow. It's kind of like a loose, it's a, like a small open world. And then when you get to, we're calling them points of interest, it's kind of, there's like a little bit of light 3D platforming or like a tiny town with like some characters to talk to. And then one of them, you end up being able to enter the mind of, and you know, what? To shake things up a bit, but that's the general like formula.
What made you switch up the formula between the first and the second game like that?
Oh, jeez.
I mean, I think it's always kind of where we're, you know, want to sort of keep things interesting for ourselves. And in between Anodyne 1, since then, like Sean has been working on, Sean released All Our Asias, which is a 3D game. And it's just kind of like something new and interesting. And it ended up kind of leading to this idea that we found really interesting of shrinking and like switching between 2D and 3D.
That's pretty cool.
It's just like we wanted to do a sequel partially for financial reasons, but partially because it would be interesting. And, you know, and while we're doing that, we're like really trying to think of what, you know, how can we respond to Anodyne in an interesting way other than just, you know, doing a very traditional sequel, which would have been to like, you know, instead of Young's Dream World, maybe it's like Old's Dream World, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, Anodyne...
Challenge ourselves.
It very much, it is what it is. And I don't think I could like do something just like better that's the same. Because it was like, it's like a kind of a personal game and had to do with, I don't know, a very specific moment in our lives. And we've like changed as people since then. And so rather than trying to like one up something that we did in the past, it's like just works better to like do something that, you know, tries to draw on similar strengths that we might have, but is totally free to kind of be its own thing as well.
Yeah. So it's a pretty exciting game. And, there's a lot of like art being finished for it, and it's interesting. But we can't share it yet, but we will publicly.
At some point. When is that one looking to release? Next year sometime?
Yeah.
I think we're on schedule for April or March, but that's when it would be finished. So, you know, maybe like the summer. It depends how we handle the publishing stuff. I'm exploring a few options, but...
Yeah, but definitely next year.
Yeah.
Nice. Paul, you've been quiet this whole time. What kind of questions do you have?
I haven't been quiet. I've been saying shit. I asked about art. Don't like to say that I'm being quiet when I'm just trying to let other people talk for a change. But when I was trying to research Anodyne, I actually saw a post that you had another game called Even the Ocean, I believe
it was.
Yeah. That was our second game.
Is there any plans for that to go beyond PC or?
Yeah, it's there is actually a console port for the three main consoles, and I think they're pretty close to submitting it for cert. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be this year, but ideally early next year. But you know, things, consoles are, I'm sure you know from interviewing, they're just like, it's really arduous to release on a console. Like terrifyingly arduous. So probably maybe the summer next year, that's my guess.
Is there extra challenge from being a two-person crew for that?
We hire people for the console ports. So for me, I usually have to do a little bit of programming. For Anodyne, I mostly just had to kind of communicate with the various teams, because usually there's... I just explained to people in the audience. For console ports, there's usually a publisher team who deals with talking to the console publishers, because they have really... complicated systems that, you know, require time to learn and like talk with. And then usually there's the porting team, which is sometimes separate or part of the publisher. And so you kind of have to talk between those three groups. So for Anodyne, I had to make some marketing assets recently. Even the Ocean, I had to add in, I think, two or three different languages, German, Spanish, and Russian, I think. So I had to code those in and like send the code differences to the porter so they could update their version. But yeah, just because programming something for a console, you have to like make sure your game works with all the complicated save systems and profile changing. And that's a lot of stuff I don't want to learn. So it's easier to just hire someone to do it and give them a cut of the revenue, because that frees up my time for Anodyne 2 and other stuff. And also like it's expensive and costly if you get it wrong.
Because it's not free to submit.
Yeah, because you have to you're paying for the people, the QA people's time to look over that and like submit a detailed report.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to get it rated and everything as well.
Yeah, and that's expensive too. Yeah.
I think wasn't it the ESRB. I don't even know how to pronounce those letters.
Letters are difficult to say, I know.
But it's just a thing. Everything's difficult to say. Have you heard me talk?
Yeah, the ESRB and Peggy is easier to say. Peggy 10.
The ESRB, though, didn't they recently change to where, I say recently, but it was like last year, so they don't have a free option at all anymore.
Yeah, something happened with that. I think it's pretty expensive now, and like it changed. There's a lot of like people want it to change, but I don't know. There's not a lot of organized efforts in that respect.
Yeah. Did you know we were going to get an M rating? I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, we are M. We're M everywhere. Yeah, it's M. Really funny. It makes
How
sense.
How did you get an M rating for the game?
I mean, it definitely makes sense. I thought you said we changed some stuff, but maybe we didn't. There's some like curse words and response and like references to like sex or scary stuff. I don't know.
Oh,
I think there's like drug references. There's some sex. There's that. I think part of it might have been like the stabbing part.
You
couldn't really get rid of that. And
no, you can't get rid of that part. The black and white town.
Yeah, that's a cool place.
Yeah,
Paul, you liked that town, really, didn't you?
I did. I thought it was awesome.
That area always blows my mind when I look at it, because it has a very strong atmosphere, and I was just like, where did this even come from?
Really intense. Yeah.
It's just really creative, just to knowing that the difficulty that's involved in creating detail and stuff in a pixelated piece anyway, and just there was just something about it that stood out, and I just was like, okay, I'm just gonna sit here and look for a little while because it was really well done.
Thanks.
And just the whole atmosphere and everything was just really prominent. I was like, wow, I'm impressed.
Thanks. Yeah, the suburb was an interesting area. Like, I think that one was from like some nightmares. based on that.
It's hard to like ask questions about a game because you can tell when you're playing Anodyne that it's the story is personal.
Yeah,
you feel like you've experienced an intimate moment. And so like it's kind of hard to ask. I don't want to give away spoilers either, and I don't want to ask something and then you'd be like, oh, it was a really horrible personal experience and I don't want to talk about that.
Oh yeah, thanks. Yeah, no.
You can ask anything. Yeah.
Nothing was too bad with that because I'm fairly fortunate, I guess, to not have had too much traumatizing moments. But yeah, a lot of the core ideas were kind of based on personal stuff.
It was kind of interesting because it had this like disconnected structure where it was Sean's ideas, but then like a lot of them I like put the details in.
Uh-huh.
In terms of like the writing and what people are actually saying and talking about, but like it was Sean's idea what the area sort of represented in a like looser, broader, like emotional sense.
Yeah.
So it's like it's not quite, no single part is like exactly either of us. It's just sort of like weird brain stuff that's like floating around that I like grabbed and stuck onto this structure that Sean had made.
So there's a special challenge when you're trying to illustrate somebody else's experience or ideas in that regard. And it's kind of impossible to not inject a little of yourself in that as well.
Yeah.
But you don't want to do a disservice to their to their creative imagining either. I'm losing my voice.
Yeah.
Too much talking this week.
It worked out really well though, because Sean was really open, I feel like, to just like wherever I took it for the most part.
Like, what were some of the experiences that influenced the game?
In terms of like a narrative perspective?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, like what were some of your...
Joe's just ripping the band-aid off.
Hey, he said he was comfortable to talking about. I figure I might as well ask.
I have trouble remembering all of them. I think, okay, I know the game is broken into like three general thematic like areas based on those three colored statues, but I'm having trouble remembering what some of them were.
Yeah, there's the red or something. There's like pain and then like loneliness or like, and then like being around other people, but like crowdedness.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the crowd, okay, the crowd in the hotel, and this is kind of, I think that's based around, like being in hotels or crowded places and some kind of, like, feelings of worry around the other, like, what other people's, not their intentions towards you, but, like, just not knowing what they could be doing, like, in a hotel.
Social anxiety.
Yeah, I think so for that, and I think that also applied to, like, the suburban apartment area. The suburb was, you know, I think some of the writing I don't really like, because I think I did a lot of the writing for the suburb area, but I think that was just generally thinking about the experience of growing up in a very, like, a suburb, which is a very, well, compared to, like, living in Chicago, it's a very spread out place that's, like, kind of eerily quiet at times. Maybe relaxing, depending. I guess it's relaxing now, but, you know, I was just thinking about how I felt at the time as like a college and high school student.
Yeah.
And then the red, I think the red area and the circus area were like something related to like the, just the fear of being injured.
Yeah. Fear of pain and harm.
Yeah.
That circus area is nightmare fodder.
Oh yeah. Circus at the end of the weird maze. That is pretty weird.
Yeah. That maze was weird. Yeah, and then I think for me, a lot of it was a lot of the dialogue and stuff kind of, I think a lot of it had to do with like memories from childhood of like when stuff kind of like felt really intense and things were really unknown. And so they felt scary or just like experiences of, I feel like the world is kind of scary when you're a child. Even if nothing too terrible happens, it's just like, what is being alive? It's a lot. It's a lot to handle.
The world is scary as an adult too, not just a child. Shit.
Yeah.
But it does make sense. I have kids and I've seen them portray that kind of mentality where like even my youngest, number three, for the longest time was utterly terrified to climb up to the top bunk on the bunk beds. So just the most mundane things when you're younger can seem far more terrifying than they truly are. Right. So I think that I'm about to ask about the choice of weapon for combat because I think that kind of played a role in the character being younger as well, and his name is Young, but you know, and the whole things are much perceived more different. I can't speak English, please. Are perceived differently as a child compared to as an adult, where you know the weapon is a broom, mm-hmm. and even one of the things that you can use the broom for is picking up dust bunnies and moving them around.
Yeah.
Was there a question there, by the way?
There was in there somewhere, but I'm not sure it came out quite like a question. Like did that perception of things being terrifying as a child or being perceived differently when you're young, was that a motivator in having the weapon be a broom?
I think the broom
that came or in was very it just early. A case
of why is that, this just why not?
I remember programming the broom, and I think it was more of just like a I can't remember the exact motivation. I mean, if I go back and dig, maybe I can find something. But that was before I even met Marina.
Yeah,
and
there's just a post-it note that somewhere that says why not a broom.
Yeah, I think I didn't put a lot of that into the broom, but I think it worked out.
It worked out extremely well.
It worked out really well, and
that's one of those just like amazing little things that happens.
Yeah.
What about the idea of floating around on dust bunnies?
Yeah, that was a really hilarious one that doesn't even really make sense, but it like totally makes sense in the game.
Dust coagulates or something.
Yeah, I have no. I don't remember where that came in.
Yeah, were you high?
No, I quit everything in college.
It just seems like a good stoner idea. Like, man, what if we make this game, but you like hit people with a broom?
I know, right? I think a lot of it sounds like those kinds of ideas, but
You're going to get him in trouble with the publisher if he's like, yeah, I come up with it while I was high.
No drugs were used during the making of Anodyne. Don't worry. Oh, also, some of our friends are on this stream. Hello, Rook. Rook said hi and in the chat.
Wait.
Said hi.
Where? Oh, right.
I think it's... She, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hi, like, Rook. It's in
that picture.
Nice.
I also see Dreamfeel. Hi. Hello, Dreamfeel.
Hi.
And I don't recognize other names, but if I know you, hello.
Bring in all your friends to watch the show.
Yeah.
There's more viewers than we've had in like a year and a half.
Oh. Yeah, there's a good amount of people watching. Oh, hi, good. Everyone.
More fun.
Oh, no. Sorry. We revealed.
Calling people out. Calling them out. Right? Making them chat.
We only get like four viewers. We can't allow lurkers. Sorry.
Everybody say hi, damn it.
Hi, damn it. Sorry, I couldn't let that go by.
Of course.
I gave it like a second and I thought, no, I'm going to say it anyway.
Now everyone's saying hi in chat. You can lurk if you want.
The damn it is important. You have to say hi, damn it.
Hi, damn it.
Hi, damn it.
Now that's the rest of the day. You're just going to walk up to people and be like, hi, damn it. And then you're going to be like, I'm sorry. I was on a weird podcast earlier.
I'm going to go to the gas station after this and do that.
Like, hi, damn it. Give me some gas, damn it.
I like how you guys say that, like, you don't do that, but I'm sitting here going, no, that's just a normal day. Provided I leave the house, then I just gradually greet people with, hi, damn it.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Then you'd have to interact with people, and that would be awful.
People are scary.
People are very interesting. Yeah, like, some of the dialogue in Anodyne is just straight up, like stories that people told me, and I'm like, that's so interesting that you would say that, like, versus like anything else you could say. Yeah. I don't know. Or like, so that person with the red frizzy hair, I think they talk about how their like mother has hairline cracks in her molars from chewing ice. I'm like, is that a thing? Like, I don't even know if that's a thing, but someone just like talked about that one time, and it's this like very chilling, uncomfortable image, and it just stuck with me. So a lot of Anodyne's dialogue is just like weird stuff that stuck with me, and I'm like, well, someone like just like told me this thing, and like I don't even know what that, like, it's so interesting that now I have this kind of uncomfortable story in my head.
It's like every
you
time
just needed an outlet for it.
Yeah.
If you go to a party, you always get like weird stories. The one time a decade I go to parties, I guess this isn't that weird, but like I met a guy who like programs touchscreens for McDonald's or something. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I guess it's not like as weird. It's just interesting. Or you hear stuff on the streets walking by people. And
yeah.
That's one of those things like you assume there's a job for it, but you don't know anybody that does it.
Yeah.
So you just kind of, in your head, it's like fairies do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And people just have very like strong feelings about just like really random stuff. And I feel like I tend to just like not express a bunch of like random opinions because I'm like, oh, that's something that I don't actually know that much about. Or like, oh, like if I had some other perspective, I'd just think differently. I kind of just like often like think several steps ahead and then I'm like, I could just not say that. Oh, but yeah. Then like, I don't know. So I guess my weird game characters are an outlet for me to just like have characters with like really strong opinions about like very like random things that most other people wouldn't care about.
It's a good source.
Yeah.
I just want someone in the game to mention like touch screens at McDonald's now.
Someone might, and Anodyne too.
Yeah.
The characters.
Is it hard to go back and promote Anodyne when you're in develop Anodyne 2 mode?
It actually works really well because any PR for Anodyne is PR for Anodyne 2.
Yeah.
And that's like we launched a Discord at the same time as the console announcement, which is good. And then when we have a Switch announcement, you know, maybe something else will happen if we have a Switch announcement.
Okay. When? You said when. Saying, no.
Whoops.
Oh, we're live.
Number one question.
No, we're still considering the possibility. We're still evaluating the possibility of a Switch port.
So hypothetically, if a Switch version were to hypothetically happen, when might that be?
Ooh, I don't know. I actually don't know. But,
and it's funny you brought up the Switch thing on your own because I was going to ask. Because I always, when we do these interviews, I always go looking for questions that I've seen people ask that haven't been answered. And I'm like, well, if I've got the developers there, I'm going to put them on the spot.
I can tell you that it's probably, it definitely, if we were working on a port, it definitely would not come out this year because it would take at least a month to get through cert. And then you'd be in like the dead zone of like November or December. If one happens, if we were working on a Switch port, it would probably come out maybe like early spring next year. late winter. I don't know.
And just keep it out of February. February is packed away.
Yeah, everyone's like panicking about February.
February is the new November.
Oh my lord. Oh.
Come on, studios go bankrupt. That way I don't have to compete.
I think you're the first person I ever heard rooting for other companies to go bankrupt.
That's a really bad thing to root for. It's people's job.
Fuck everyone else. The only thing that matters is Anodyne.
Anodyne. Please buy our game.
So did you guys show the game off at any kind of conventions or press events, stuff like that?
Yeah. For a while we were going to a bunch of things.
We did.
Go ahead.
Probably the biggest one where we were specifically showing Anodyne was... Did we get to show it? Yeah, did we get to show it at GDC because it was the student? Or wait.
No, we didn't get a booth because we were only honorable mention.
Oh, right.
But... And I don't think you went that year. I went by myself.
Oh, yeah.
The first year.
I guess the first big thing that we went to together, was it for Even the Ocean? Like the PAX Prime?
It was PAX Prime. I think it was the first and last. We went like, this is expensive and tiring.
And right, we showed Even the Ocean an early demo and Anodyne at the same time at PAX Prime 2013. Oof. Yeah. A long time ago.
Yeah, I think I might start going to conventions again, but I don't think I would get a booth because I get the sense that it's what's more important is meeting people and publishers and but showing would be good, but it's expensive, so.
You know, if you had a Switch version of the game, you could just walk around to the publisher's booth and be like, you want to play our shit and see if it's any good?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that would be a lot cheaper.
I do have a Switch in my apartment right now that I haven't turned on in a long time.
Yeah.
You would have a reason to turn it on if you could play Anodyne on it.
Yeah. Or if Shin Megami Tensei 5 came out, then I could turn it on.
I don't even know what that is. Congratulations on pronouncing it so smoothly, though.
Oh, thanks. No, I speak Japanese, so it's fine.
Yeah. Cons, I have a good time at cons sometimes. I can't go to like too many of them, I think, but if I go every once in a while, then I'm like, oh, all these people who I like see on Twitter and who make cool games and are nice. Yeah, it's good.
Well, if you're ever looking for a fun one to go to, the one I go to every year is called MAGFest in the DC area.
Oh, I went to MAGFest. That's
right. Yeah, Sean's done that.
I forgot. I showed that before Anodyne came out.
That's that was cool. Pretty good. What year were you at MAGFest, or have you been to a couple of them? 2013?
Yeah, I think that's the only one I went to.
Yeah, you should go again.
Yeah, it was a pretty good fest, and it's not as expensive as PAX.
Joe is addicted to MAGFest.
I love MAGFest. I've never been to a PAX. I want to get to a PAX. I've never done the E3 thing. I'm hoping to do that soon, but MAGFest has been my thing every year. I've never missed one.
I think MAGFest is more fun. I showed at E3 once, actually. I'm forgetting everything. I showed at E3 in 2013. No, wait. Yes, no, 2013. And that was interesting. It seems something that would be more beneficial if you were running a much larger studio and like looking for investors or something. Mm. We kind of just got a lot of bad advice. Like someone was like, the story I remember, someone played it. He's like, this is cool, but have you thought about putting in an Egyptian-themed level? I was like, no.
Step away from the booth, please. It's hilarious.
And then he went to the Assassin's Creed booth, and everything just clicked for them.
Yeah.
There's Joe sitting over there going, why didn't I suggest a cat level?
There was a really funny era of video games where it was just kind of all about, like, sort of like caricatured world tour things where you have these like stereotypical characters from like different world cultures fighting you, or like the standard enemy type dressed up in different like Halloween costumes.
Oh, wow.
Wait, what's an example?
Like Crash 3. Like,
oh, okay.
There's like a kind of a Aladdin-y sort of level with like flying carpets and, I don't know, brigands.
In a Crash game?
Yeah, Crash 3 is like a time traveling one. And then there's like a sort of like a Great Wall of China level or something like that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, video games are weird.
Video games are weird. I think that's why I love video games so much, is because of how off the wall they could be and still make sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Games are, you put stuff in the game and people think about the image they see. It's weird. Games are weird. It's like, because, yeah, I don't know. If you just made a film of that, I don't know. Games are weird for making a lot of games.
Games are able to tell a story that movies cannot get away with. Like, could you imagine if Edith Finch was a movie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
That would not have gone over as well. Whereas with games, we're like, oh, that was an incredible game, but you drawn a baby. So, you know, that wouldn't have gone away as a movie, or maybe even a book would have struggled a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, every medium has its affordances.
Yeah.
Games affordances are you can put a weird shit in a 3D room and it's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. But books like can do some wild stuff too.
Yeah.
It's true.
I really like books.
I like books too.
Yeah, there's this book, so like the Wrinkle in Time movie just came out.
That was weird.
I haven't seen it yet, but like what that makes me think of is the sequel to, there's like a million sequels, but like the next sequel to A Wrinkle in Time, the book is, I think it's called A Wind in the Door. And like half the book takes place in like this microscopic world. It's kind of like Anodyne too, but it's like this microscopic world where they don't really think about like space in the same way, and they don't really talk to each other or like walk around. They're just like floating in this space and like communicate with each other regardless of space through this sort of like telepathy. And I'm just like rereading that book recently, I was like, it would be hilarious if they tried to make a movie of this, because it just like wouldn't make any sense.
Oh yeah, that's cool. It reminds me of the, like, has anyone read the Three Body Trilogy?
No.
It's an SF trilogy. Yeah. Anyways, the third book, there's, I don't want to spoil it. I guess it's a shame, so, but there's a lot of, like, speculative, like, sci-fi and, like, dimension shifting stuff, and I don't know how you would represent it in visually, you know.
Yeah.
So it's interesting when words can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes reading the word is more powerful, because you can just, if you don't have the image to fill it in, the person fills it in, and maybe that's stronger.
The imagination is more powerful than any kind of movie or visual representation could be.
Yeah. And I'm going to plug Luca again. Have you played Luca?
No, what is Luca?
Luca, it's not my game, so I'm going to blow the description. It's like, it's this very strong, dark black color focused aesthetic where you're kind of exploring this sort of abstracted nightmare world as this character, and has very good top-down 2D combat, a very unique and strong kind of like sketch as in like sketching aesthetic, and the themes are very interesting. They feel like related to like religion and depression to me, and it came out a few weeks ago, and it's probably one of the strongest games that'll come out this year. Definitely check it out.
On Steam, I presume?
Steam and Itch, yeah. It's an indie game.
Do you know if they have any console plans?
Alright, yeah, you should definitely still check it out. I don't know about console plans, but
I'll definitely look into it, because it sounds really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is a Unity game, so that makes it a lot easier to be on console, so hopefully.
Well, my fingers are crossed for that. But I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Was there anything else about Anodyne you wanted to talk about before we wrap up?
Oh yeah, I think I'm good. Maybe. Oh yeah, I don't know. For people listening, yeah, you know, please look forward to Anodyne 2. We're going to explain more about. I get the sense that people are perhaps confused about the 2D and 3D stuff, because I haven't really spoken explicitly about the connection. So you know, please look forward to when
are
we
people confused? Explain that.
No, but I can kind of just like perceive it from just the various questions and comments I've seen.
Interesting. I think it's really an exciting game, and we'll have a lot to offer and be interesting.
Like, I don't think it's confusing to explain. I just think it just needs to like show a video of how it works, and that's it.
Well, I am looking forward to hearing more about that one. Where can people keep up to date with you two and what you guys are doing?
Oh, yeah. We have a Discord. You can follow us on our Twitters, which I will post in the chat. Oh, yeah, because we can. It'll show up in the video. Sean's Twitter, Sean_HTCH. Marina's Twitter is... _K. And we have a Discord, which I am learning that apparently you can expire old invite links if you go the wrong way. So one second while I get the right link for that.
Yeah, I don't know how Discord links work. It's all confusing to me. I'm too old for it.
You have to check a button that says you want it to be a permanent link.
Yeah,
like Discord, expired or something? Or
Discord is intense.
Marina has a Patreon, which you can support her at, and that's very useful. Sorry, I'm typing. Okay, I got the link here. We have a Discord link, which I will post in the video. And I will post Marina's Patreon. Okay, I have a lot of links.
I'll be sure to copy all those links and include them in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
Thanks. Oh, I got to put the... Sorry. Okay. Oh, that didn't work either. Okay, I guess it's onlyparses.com. Yeah, those are the main things. And, you know, you can always check out our other games, Even the Ocean. Games. Just typing. I'm going to mute myself.
Yeah, Even the Ocean is a pretty cool game, too. The basic idea is that there's these two opposing energy types, the light energy and dark energy. And instead of having like a health bar, you can like get hit by color-coded different like obstacles, and they'll push you in one direction or the other. And you have to not fill up your bar with either energy type in order to not die. And it's like a 2D platformer. And there's like a whole kind of like RPG-ish style story and like overworld map and stuff like that surrounding it.
Yeah. Even the Ocean's really interesting too. Definitely check that one out. I hope it comes to console, because maybe it can have a second life, you know.
That'd be cool.
I mean, it will come to consoles, just it's a matter of when. Hopefully before they announce the PS5.
Just in time for you to have to port it again.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Well, it has been fantastic having the two of you on the show chatting. Do either of you have any final words to end this?
Thank you for listening. Thank you for having us and spending your morning or afternoon with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been great being here.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks again to the Anodyne crew for joining and chatting about the game. Lots more show to take care of. A lot of really cool games to talk about. We're starting things off. Chris Taylor's here. How are you doing, buddy?
Howdy. Doing all right.
How's life?
Oh, pretty good. Started a new job today, so I'm kind of like tired and brain fried from sitting there and listening or watching videos about, you know, sexual harassment and don't be a racist and stuff like that. And speaking of which, actually, the don't be a racist video I've actually watched before at another job.
Really?
Yeah. I think they got it from the same place.
Nice.
It's like, I find this very familiar. Well, it must work.
Yeah, places are using it. Plus, you're not a racist, so.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been fired for being a racist. I cannot. I'm not one of those guys that's like, I don't have a racist bone in my body. And then, like, you know, in the next sentence says something like really problematic. But, you know.
Just depends whose lap I'm sitting on. Oh, wait. No. That's where the sexual harassment video comes from.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go. See, I'm telling you.
Oh, man. So, Vidya games. You got a bunch to talk about.
Yeah.
You ready for these?
It's a good batch of games. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Little Dragon's Cafe, developed by Toy Box, published by Axis Games, released August 24th on the Switch and PS4 for $59.99. Little Dragon's Cafe opens with a twin brother and sister learning to cook and manage a small cafe with their mother. All was routine until one morning when the twins discover that their mother won't wake up. Suddenly, a strange old man appears and tells them that they must raise a dragon to save her. Working with three quirky cafe employees, the twins must wrangle a dragon and run the family business while finding a way to save their mother. Chris, what the hell is this game? Because it sounds crazy.
It is a little crazy. And actually, I'm surprised that they were able to summarize it like in that few sentences. So, okay, Little Dragon Cafe. I guess the first thing to know about this game is that it was made by the person who made the original Harvest Moon, that good old late era Super Nintendo game that you cannot get a cartridge of anymore, apparently. But, so the original Harvest Moon was like, it was very beloved, for the fact that it was, you know, it was a fun routine, you could do unusual things in it. Most of it was related to farm work, but you know, it had a very awkward dating sim in it and a very awkward way of scoring things. But ultimately it's, you know, a slightly broken but fun adventure, 2 years on the farm. So this game is very reminiscent of it in those ways. So it's, the storyline is basically, two kids. You get to pick which one you want to be, and the other one is going to be the, you know, one's the silent protagonist, and the other one's going to have all the dialogue. Your mom, who runs a cafe out in the middle of nowhere, apparently to nobody. there's no real mention of having any customers before you actually take the thing over.
I mean, that's how you run a successful business with no customers, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's, nobody to clean up after, I guess. Yeah, hours are short. But anyways, she falls, like, you know, you do the tutorial stuff, learn how to cook a egg. That is your first recipe. And then she goes to bed, all happy-go-lucky and stuff, but sort of portentous about, like, her tiredness. And then, sure enough, the kids wake up in the morning, and suddenly the mood changes a lot as your mom falls into a coma. But thankfully, you know, the little wizard, I mean, old man, he starts to say he's a wizard, but then he's like, I'm just a random old man. Who looks like an upside-down bag, but anyway. So he tells you got to raise this little dragon that he happens to have under his robes in the form of an egg, not the kind that you cook, the kind that you raise as a dragon. And so, yeah, the story is a little nonsensical, but I mean, if you go with it, then it's like, all right, this makes sense. And then, you know, part of it is, you know, every time you basically meet a goal in the game, which I guess the first goal would be to cook an egg, then, you know, it moves the story along. But until you move the story along, you can kind of do whatever you want. And what the available options for that are is taking your silent protagonist outside of the restaurant and, like, searching around for things. You forage, basically, for supplies for your kitchen. So, and, of course, your little dragon is your assistant. And the little dragon is the most adorable thing in the world. It's just, like, sitting there happily bounding behind you. Although you can send it into a little cave and it, like, goes in there. And then it comes out with bacon. So, I guess it's killing a tiny animal and extracting bacon from it. But yeah, you shake down trees, you shake bushes, you know, do all kinds of stuff. You find random bits of recipes. You have to find four bits in order to have a whole recipe. And then you get back into the kitchen and learn how to cook the thing and then add it to the menu, which if it's on the menu and you did it well, then your reputation in your restaurant goes up and then the story keeps moving. The way you cook is actually a rhythm game. So they've thrown that into the mix as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you get the new recipe and, you know, it'll play like a little, you know, thing, and then you just follow the notes with the buttons on the pad. And it's pretty tricky, actually, but, you know, if you do really well with that, then it really helps you along. Any recipes that you cook, you don't eat, you just feed them to your little dragon. I guess the kids are just going to starve.
Makes sense.
But, yeah. So yeah, that's the gist of the gameplay. So the interesting things about it are, for one, is that the world outside is kind of surreal and definitely reminds me of, like, old school video game logic. Like, in order to get meat, like I said, you send your little dragon into, like, a little random cave, to harvest meat. You can go fishing, which it's kind of an Animal Crossing style fishing game. You can also grow things in a garden, which, actually anything that in the game you can actually make grow faster. Like, it all grows on a timer. So, like, you know, maybe 3 days for you to be able to harvest something again. Or every night your little dragon goes to sleep and you can harvest its manure, and that will make things grow faster.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, dragon poop is always good.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, you can, like, grow your whole garden and stuff, and that's really good. And interestingly, the manure will also make harvest points for fish go up as well. So I guess you're just dumping manure into the water and the fish are like, yum. I don't know. Anyways, every time the story unfolds, you get to explore more map, and it's really cool. And then eventually your little dragon grows up. I haven't reached the point where he's grown up enough, but as I understand, he eventually gets big enough that you can use him as transportation. So that's exciting. So yeah, that's the game. I found this game very, very enchanting. I think it's also a little bit broken. Like I said, it's very surreal, and there's, you know, dialogue foibles. There's some slight glitchage. There's definitely the kind of thing where, like, when you're walking by shadows, they sometimes jitter. Mm. And then there's different things, like, you basically never have to go back inside the house, even though the world is operating on a timer where, like, you know, an hour is just like about a minute or maybe less. So, you know, time's moving pretty quickly. So you do kind of start to feel the rush, and then then you realize, oh, I can actually just stay out all night and into the next day and then just keep doing things. So there's no real penalty for going out all night. And I'm like, these poor kids. So, yeah.
So overall, $60 on this one. What do you think of it?
Well, $60, of course, it costs that much because it has a physical release as well. Unfortunately, everybody's too late to get the special edition that came with a little plush dragon.
Aww.
So, yeah, I know. That was, Catherine tried to get one and she couldn't, like, she tried to pre-order it on the Switch and didn't get there in time. So yeah, that's gone. So this is a game that, you know, $59, if you want to buy the physical version, you know, I usually like to collect those, then I'd say definitely worth it. This is a really fun game. The presentation is a very colorful, crayon-y, like, I don't know, matte looking sort of art style. I mean, you can just check out screenshots to see what it looks like. It looks really good in the game. It's just, you know, certain things, like the way that certain things are processed and like the way that, you know, the amount of load times, especially, you think, oh, this is actually kind of a cheap game, but I don't think it is. It's just, you know, like Harvest Moon before it, all the concentration went into making it fun and adorable and bizarre.
Which is good in games.
You know, not as... Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, Skyrim still costs $60, so... or something like that.
And that game runs rock solid.
Yeah, exactly. I just watched a speed run of that the other day where somebody beat it in an hour doing, like, all kinds of glitches, and I was like, oh, geez. Why do I even bother with that game? if you're going to buy this one, though, for right now at least, the PS4 version is going to be preferable because all the reports I've seen, and indeed my own gameplay confirms this, it runs faster and better than the Switch version. Apparently the Switch version's got some technical issues in terms of like constant load times and things like that. And like they might fix that. I mean, that's certainly within their power. And indeed, I would love to play this portable, but I'm perfectly happy with this PS4 version.
Nice. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Next game to talk about is called Wasteland 2 Director's Cut, changing themes just a little bit here. developed and published by InXile Entertainment, released September 13th on the Switch for $29.99. The Wasteland's hellish landscape is waiting for you to make your mark or die trying. With over 80 hours of gameplay, you would deck out your Desert Ranger squad with the most devastating weaponry this side of the Fallout Zone, test the limits of your strategy skills, and bring justice to the Wasteland. Chris, how was your trip to the Wasteland?
Oh boy! Well, it was it was about as post-apocalyptic as you like. So yeah, with this game, the first things I noticed that actually almost kind of put me off of it was when I started the game. Like every single thing that you wanted to do would be like 10 pages of tutorials and like still shots of tutorials. Like nobody's really like people are explaining stuff to you. And the game will literally interrupt somebody explaining something to you in order to give you a tutorial on the same thing. So it's kind of like they really double up on the tutorials. Now, of course, the tutorials can be disabled, but they shouldn't be because this game is very complex. And once I kind of got the hang of it, then I was like, oh, okay, actually, this is really fun. And then I would pause and there would be another tutorial and be like, get out of here. But, you know, all that aside, so this is a game that is an RPG, a tactical strategy RPG, a little bit like a faster moving Final Fantasy Tactics type thing, which, you know, I'm so dated in my
references,
game references that, yeah, my reference points that's what I'm going for. It's like Disgaea, but anyways... But it's all dressed up in this like post-apocalyptic, like, you know, survival in the desert sort of deal. Like moving around on the world map, you have like a canteen of water and it just quickly goes down. And so you really can't do a whole lot of exploring at first. But then you find oasis points and that lets you refill your water. And so, you know, you're back to good. And, you know, then you get into some random encounters, which takes you to a different map that lets you shoot the bad guys. And when you do that, then you get yelled at by your first mission for being too late, for being like late to get there. Like I literally got stressed out by one of the NPCs who was yelling at me about not getting there in time. And I was like, sorry, lady, I was trying to learn the game. More tutorial screens while the game explains what being yelled at means. So, yeah, like, you know, this is a really cool game. Like it's got a little bit of classic dungeon crawler to it. You can edit your party, like every member of your party, all the way down to like the nitty gritty, like the real small details. Or you can do what I did and just go with the default party just to get things started. And the default party is actually pretty good.
I went with default when I played it on Xbox.
Yeah, did you have like pills and bear and...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so same. So if you go with the default party in this, you got two people confirming that it's solid. But yeah, you have different character classes, like snipers who can, you know, shoot from a great distance and actually aren't any good up close. You've got medics, like pills, who, you know, they can handle like surgery kits and things like that to keep your people healed up, you know, or shoot with pistols or something like that. And then you've got, you know, more melee type people. I had a bald guy that was all about being a kiss ass and then fighting with a knife and then later a wrench. And I was like, that's my guy. That's me. So yeah, like it's really interesting, like the colorful array of characters you can customize. It's definitely like I threw it on the easiest difficulty and I had so much trouble getting into like the first sort of dungeon, quote unquote. And like I said, I tried to do more random encounters and gain a few levels, but then I got yelled at a lot. So a lot of the whole thing about it is that random encounters aren't like something that you can just grind out because your characters all have limited ammo. So unless you're outfitting them all with deadly wrenches, or, you know, makeshift machetes and things like that, then you're going to find yourself like, you know, sort of fighting to stay on top of your ammo supply at first. But I could definitely see where, especially with the leveling up system, like if you level up your gun skill, it makes you use less ammo. I don't know how that works, but there's definitely, it looks like, you know, when you get your characters way up there that you start to have a whole lot of fun with like the extra things that you can do. My favorite, of course, being toaster repair.
Yes.
Apparently you can have a character learn how to fix toasters and then people leave stuff inside toasters. So it actually ends up paying off for you. So I quite like that.
So how well does the game perform and play on the Switch? It sounds like content-wise, everything is there that we know and love from the game. How does it play?
I thought it played really well. Now, the one thing about playing it on the Switch is that I played it a lot in portable mode. And even when I put the text on the absolute biggest that it could get, I found myself squinting at this game a lot. Because there's so much text and it's very small. And like if you got the headphones in and they're reading the text to you, that's fine. But a lot of the text is not read out, so you kind of have to be like, oh, what am I looking at here? Like, when it makes notes whenever you do something, like, the text can be very hard to read in portable mode. But apart from that, performance-wise, like, it processes just fine, graphics look great, sound is great, and, yeah, like, it, you know, it's kind of a dungeon crawler Diablo type of, you know, survival craziness.
Just a lot of goodness there.
Yeah, a lot of goodness.
Well, then for $30, what do you think?
Well, $30 is usually, you know, right at my limit for things to download. But if I were looking for a good post-apocalyptic RPG with, you know, some actually interesting characters and interesting dialogue and a huge amount of challenge and replayability, then yeah, this is definitely the kind of game that I would go for.
Nice. Good to hear that you enjoyed it.
Yeah. I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to. Just because post-apocalyptic, like dystopian stuff is usually not my aesthetic, so but it was solid enough to sell me.
Awesome, good stuff. Next game to talk about is called Broken Sword 5: The Serpent's Curse, developed and published by Revolution Software, released September 21st on the Switch for $29.99. Paris in the spring, shots out ring from a gallery. A robbery, a murder, and the beginning of another epic Broken Sword adventure. Unravel a terrifying conspiracy in the enhanced edition of this epic award-winning adventure. Chris, what happens here?
Oh boy. It seems like I'm getting a lot of point and clicks, so maybe that's just my thing now.
Maybe.
Yeah, Broken Sword is actually one of those series I've been following for a long time without really knowing what it is. It's always that thing where I see it and I'm like, oh, I wonder what this is. And I look on the back, I was like, I still don't know what this is. but finally, in you know, the nowadays of YouTubes and such, then of course we know what they are. It's a long-running series of basically point-and-click adventure games starring George Stoppard. I think it's Stoppard.
Close enough.
Yeah, I'm bad at names. But George and his femme fatale, like, crime-fighting partner Nico is you know, who's a French lady who you actually, this in the story, you get to sort of take turns looking at the game through each character's perspective, so you get technically play the game as both of the characters, but I guess George is the one that goes all the way back to the original game, which I know it was on PlayStation. I guess it was on PC before that, and it was re-released on Game Boy Advance of all things.
Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, so it was a game that originally had a very cartoony sort of style, almost like a overdone Don Bluth sort of deal. But nowadays, the characters all move in this, they're all 3D models, so they kind of move around a lot more fluidly. Although you can definitely tell that there's like still the elements of the original's like art style. For instance, the backgrounds are gorgeous paintings of, you know, sprite paintings of like a very ideal looking, you know, Paris, France, you know. And I think the main thing that this game has going for it is that it's very interesting. The dialogue is really cool and actually sort of realistic and also really funny. Like, you run into some funny characters. But yeah, the actual meat of the gameplay is that, you know, you're an insurance guy. I guess that's been his job for most of the chapters. And, you know, the art gallery that your company insures falls victim to a random burglary. Not random, actually. It seemed very, very planned, and you have to figure out what the plan was. But it seemed random at the time, where a burglar came in and stole a painting that wasn't so expensive, but definitely a painting people had been murdered over. The opening cinematic shows, like 70 years prior, somebody getting murdered over the painting. And, yeah, so the burglar comes in and, you know, shoots the gallery owner, and then you're just kind of left to, put the pieces together. You know, this is the way that the point-and-click aspect of it goes is that, you know, you walk around in front of everything. You actually point at stuff or, you know, move the cursor over to it. And if it's something that, you know, obviously there's flavor text everywhere. Like, you could spend an hour inside of that one crime scene and before you've actually, you know, touched on everything, literally. including, like, messing with the dead body's toupee. Like,
oh, God.
Which doesn't seem to have any consequence, so but I still did it just to see if anything happened, because that's how you're supposed to do these games. Of course. But yeah, you can just have, like, you know, all the dialogue, all the flavor text, you know, call your boss and he yells at you for not chasing down the crook. You know, you try to convince somebody to give you a door code. And the character that you're talking to is actually, and this is what I like in this game, because it's the fifth game in a series. And when it seems that two characters know each other, you can access a bio in the menu that actually tells you all about that character and where they first appeared in the series.
Oh, that's neat.
So yeah, in the first game, in the first room, I find out that, oh, there's this character that we first connected with in Broken Sword 2. And that's a very handy thing to have, because the game actually does refer to the past games in, like, sort of offhand comments, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just basically walking around, and every time you find something that seems to be significant, it adds it to your kind of inventory of things to sort of, and then, you know, when you talk to a character, you can then choose that thing, and then it'll bring it up as a piece of conversation. The game is pretty cool about certain things. Like, if you seem to have missed a clue, the game somehow provides you another way of getting to it. So, for instance, when the character that you talk to, like, during the robbery, he faints, and you're supposed to pick his pocket and take his nail clippers. But if you don't do that and you wake him up through using an item that you find on the dead body, then he gets up and the nail clippers fall out of his pocket anyway. So it's, you know, the game seems to be really well put together in that way. But yeah, I had, you know, I didn't seem to move very much within a couple of hours of playing this, you know, but, you know, I found a few locations and talked to a ton of people and saw all this dialogue, and it was very intriguing. So this is definitely one I want to keep playing.
Nice. So for $30, what do you think of it?
I think, and I'll tell you the truth, I looked ahead to see how much actual content's in this game. This is a great one for people who like to read games like they're a novel. And since this is such a long-standing series, like, they definitely know what they're doing. So it's not your typical point and click, just random insanity. Everything does seem to have a rhyme and reason, and it is really nice to see characters sort of interacting with people they're familiar with, rather than it just being the clueless protagonist, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you really feel like you're part of something that's getting big. And so for that reason, I guess, for lack of a better term, it feels more adult. Like, feels more like it's appealing to a more mature person than, like, a usual point and click, like, you know, like Wind Monk or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, those other ones I've been playing lately. Although those are funnier, so. Well, no, I can't say which one's funnier. Like, this one, you talk to a French waiter who's, like, all about, like, the French Revolution and, like, nihilism and stuff like that, and you have to convince him that you're a revolutionary before he'll serve you coffee. So it's just, like, weird things like that that are pretty fun.
Nice. So overall, it's a winner.
Yeah, it's a winner.
Nice.
Go ahead and get it.
You got one final game to talk about. That is called Oh My Godheads Party Edition, developed by Tattoo Tech. I had trouble with it, too. Tattoo Tech, maybe?
It seemed like it was Tattoo Tech.
Tattoo Tech. We'll go with that.
Sure.
Published by Square Enix Collective, released September 25th on the Switch for $14.99. Fast, frenetic, capture the head mayhem. Chris, not a lot of description there. What is this game?
Is that all the description?
That's all I got.
Wow. I was hoping they'd explain what the Square Enix Collective is. Is that like...
That's basically their indie branch of working with indie developers to get their games out to a wider audience.
Oh, okay. Well, this one definitely felt solid, so, like, I would totally believe Square's involvement, maybe with the finer points. But, yeah, so this is a seemingly one in a long line of, you know, multi-controller, couch mayhem sort of multiplayer madness. This one has an interesting twist in that it is basically that you are a group of worshippers who are fighting over the head of your deity.
Nice.
Which is that deity can be everything from like an angry head that causes like earthquakes to like a Thor looking head that causes lightning strikes to a severed catfish head that doesn't seem to have much relevance until you realize that one of the selectable players is a penguin. And you're like, oh, this is the penguin's god. Nice. Or something. I don't know. That's what I got out of it. So this is, you know, you can choose from a whole bunch of human characters that, man, I don't know. I just did an anti-racism training, so maybe they're a little problematic in places, but there's nothing that really stood out. Just like, you know, the typical people you'd see worshiping severed heads as gods, and then regular looking people, explorers, and then a skeleton. I think it's called Dave, and then
Dave the skeleton.
I think it's Dave. I'm bad with names. And then there's a penguin with a monocle and a top hat. So clearly, this game knows its audience. I mean, those are going to be the characters everybody's going to go for. I certainly went with the skeleton for a long time. So the actual gameplay of it is basically a kind of, there's many different modes that you can select. There's kind of a King of the Hill mode. There's a almost a soccer-esque, like, just get the head to the goal type of thing. And then there's ones where you just kind of ignore the head and just try and kill each other. Although the heads can be used as a weapon, you can actually throw them at people.
Nice.
Yeah, and, like, the game gives you, like, you have a basic, dash button, an attack button, all sorts of stuff like that. There's different things in the stages you can use, different unlockables and stuff like that. Basically the only thing that really stood out is that it feels really solid. It has online, which is good. And
it's just batshit crazy.
And it's just, yeah, it's crazy. You could be a penguin fighting over a fish head. Definitely the kind of game that you want to play with people on the couch. As a one-player experience, it does lose the freshness, after, a certain amount of time.
I guess that's why it's party edition.
Yeah, exactly. This is the kind of game that you break out at a party when everyone has hit their skill limit and overcooked or something.
Nice. Then $15 on it. What do you think?
$15 if you got friends to play it with you. As a single player, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's solid. Like I said, it doesn't have any real, doesn't really have a whole lot of holes in it,
Yeah.
It's basically, it's simple and it works.
Which is all games need to do, just work.
Yeah, definitely. But I do stress, yeah, with friends, it seems like it's a really fun game.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Chris, it is always good having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up before we move on?
I don't know. Don't Nothing. Be racist.
That's good life advice in general.
There you go. Just don't. If you feel yourself starting to, then be like, nah, I'm going to take a step back. Think about what the multiple videos I've seen on the subject have told me.
All right, next up, we got Pernell joining the show. Pernell, how's it going?
Doing all right, though we started getting into a little bit of a jabber.
Yeah, I figure if we're going to start jabbing about pizza and everything else, we might as well record this shit, right?
I'm not going to deny that. You are 100% on that.
Gotta
so,
make that happen.
Pizza, now, pizza, we agreed, pretty much makes everything better. Like, it generally just has that effect to make things better when they otherwise would be frustrating.
Correct.
And then the question came up is that I don't think I've ever met a person that didn't like pizza. And if I don't know if I want to meet that person because it scares the thought of it alone scares me. Like, there are pizza toppings people don't like. I get it. Some people don't like pineapple. They're wrong, but I get that they don't
I'm
like
I'm not wrong.
Wrong!
I am not wrong. I don't like pineapple.
I'm that way with mushrooms and onions, though. But
onions could eat a dick. Fuck onions.
Yes, they can. See, we don't agree on pineapple, but we agree where it counts. Onions suck, and that's what matters. I hold a very stern place in my heart for onions and where they can go to hell. But
on pizza, off pizza, onions could just blow me.
Exactly. I don't even know if I want them to blow me because I don't need those things around there. Screw that. Don't want them. But like, for all the disagreement on toppings, the actual concept of the food should be universally liked. A person can be unable to eat bread and will miss pizza. They won't hate it. They'll just regret that they can't consume it. Like, it's one of those things. They end up getting crustless pizza as a compromise. Like, people like pizza. It's just a perfect freaking food. It's one of nature's perfect foods.
Mm-hmm.
The Italians pulled off a freaking winner with that one. Oh, mercy.
Winner, winner, chicken. Winner, winner, pizza dinner.
Yes, yes. The most of pizza dinners. Now I'm waiting for somebody to come up with a freaking like a video game where you're running a pizza parlor just so they can see how they can try to implement a system for producing pieces based on popularity just so all the players can get pissed off when they try to create an algorithm to determine what the popular toppings are. It's like, bullshit! This is a good topping! Your game is wrong! It doesn't know what people want! My pizza parlor would have been a success if your algorithm wasn't so bad.
How do we always talk about, like, food and weather when you're on the show?
Because they're awesome things to talk about. In the wrong company, it's just bland small talk. But in the right company, there's an enjoyable dialogue.
It's entertaining small talk.
Exactly. See? It works. It could be worse. How's the weather, Joe?
It's okay.
Yeah, weather
sucks. The sun was out for a little bit, and then it started to rain.
Then it got cold.
It got chilly, so I could probably use a sweater right now.
But then the sweater will just get damp, and then that's negative two. Nothing's good. Stop. It's painful to even try to do that. It's like, no, I can't do it.
Can't have boring talk when you're on, Pernell. Nothing is ever boring when you're on.
Except for the game sometimes. Oh, no!
Are you hinting at something?
We'll just have to find out.
We will. Should we dive into these?
Let's get down to business.
All right, your first game to talk about is called Metal Max Xeno, developed by Kadokawa Games Cattle Call in 24 frame, published by NIS America, released September 25th on the PS4 for $39.99. Humanity is on the brink of extinction. Half a century ago, a mother computer known as NOA became sentient and almost destroyed humankind. NOA's, or Noah's, destructive reach has even reduced Asia's largest metropolis, Tokyo, to rubble. Why can't I talk?
because that's what, yes, but that's all the result.
Thinking of pizza. Hey. I'm thinking of pizza.
Delicious pizza. So, no one did that.
Explore this desolate wasteland known as Talus, a casualty in this conflict, as he searches for allies and hope in a vengeance-charged war against machines. Pernell, what is Metal Max Xeno?
Metal Max is honestly a surprise release, which is why I really wanted to get a review of this, because I didn't even expect it to come out. So, for those not in the know, the Metal Max series has been around for quite some time. Like, it's been around since at least the Super Nintendo era. But with the exception of one PlayStation 2 game, which didn't even have the name of the series attached to it, we never received a single game in this franchise. Just that one. And you would have never.
What was the PS2 one?
It was called Metal Saga. I think Atlas published it. In fact, I'm positive Atlas published it, because they published that kind of stuff. That's what they do. At least they used to do. But this game came along and was like, oh, wow, we're going to take a crack at a Metal Max game with an actual Metal Max name. This sounds interesting. Let's see where it goes. And it's an interesting concept, because it started out slightly underwhelming, but then it clicked. And once it clicked, I was having a great time. So the idea is that the game immediately just kind of throws you out into the wasteland, and you're this, you know, this random, you know, angsty badass with a mechanical arm who just wants to kill all machines because fuck them. And he stumbles across a place called Iron Base, because I guess he was kind of pointed in the direction of Iron Base in his journeys. And the residents there kind of say, hey, what are you doing here? We're holograms, not real people. You want in? Do some work. So they just kind of send him off into the waste immediately to go find survivors. And initially, at this point in the game, I wasn't really enjoying myself, but here's why. So you're driving around the wasteland in a tank. You start out with a tank. And the combat is well, let's just start this from the beginning. So when you come across enemies on the field, the game will alert you. And when the game would alert you, you would hit a button to bring up like a target gauge. And you can find where the enemy is and then shoot them with your tank. And then I would kill them and get experience points. That was boring to me. I was like, where is the combat? Is this the tank combat? I don't know. And I'm just wandering around, and the wasteland was definitely a wasteland. Like, it was, it looked nice, but it wasn't like graphically drawing. It didn't make me go, oh, wow, look how immersive this wasteland is. It was like, this is like a retro, like a wasteland from a late PS2, early PS3 game. But I kept going because it's a review. And honestly, it took me about 3 hours or so, but then the magic started to happen and the game started to be feeling really awesome. So what happens is eventually what I came to learn is that the reason why enemies were dying so quickly is that when you shoot them with your tank on the field, it's kind of like quick combat. If you do enough damage to kill the opponent, they die. But if there are multiple enemies that show up on the field, or if it's just a powerful enemy and you fire at it, it will take some damage off of it, and then you'll go into a combat scenario. And combat is quite cool in this game. So for those who used to like Xenogears, primarily not so much because you piloted mechs, but because you piloted a vehicle, you will love this game. So combat takes place on two planes, vehicle combat and on foot combat. Vehicle combat involves you equipping a tank, of which you can find multiple in the world itself. You can equip the tank with various guns which have elemental properties such as fire, ice, electricity, sonic, and so on and so forth. And you can apply those to different opponents who may be weak or strong against them. In addition to that, you can apply an engine, which determines how much weight the tank can carry. So you have to actually manage the weight level of the tank. The higher your weight capacity but lower your actual weight, the more hit points the tank actually has. So you can load the tank with everything and get to the dang near max, but your hit points will suffer for it. So it's an interesting balancing effect there, determining what to put on your tank and how you want to load them out. But tank combat involves pretty much using all these elements to attack opponents, and hopefully prior to them actually taking your tank down to zero hit points, or SP in this game. Because once your tank hits zero SP, future damage to the tank will start to damage the actual tank, eventually breaking parts and eventually blowing the tank up. So you have to be very careful about how you handle opponents in this game. The other type of combat is foot combat. You can get out of the tank, and when you're out of the tank, you have a completely different set of abilities from inside the tank, and you also have different equipment. So you have like normal armor like you would in RPG, accessories, armor, helmet, and weaponry. You can equip up to 3 weapons on a person and switch between them. So if you have a full roster of members, you can have a fair number of weapons to choose from in any given scenario, which is kind of nice, both in tank and on foot. But of course, if you die on foot, you're dead and you need somebody to resurrect you with an item. And as you start to get new party members, skills start to kind of open up too. Like, you'll get mechanics that can actually repair the tanks. You'll get healers that can heal party members. You'll get characters who are classified as like survivors, and their whole shtick is they just lie on the ground and play dead in hopes that enemies don't attack them. It's pretty funny. And you can kind of eventually, well, I don't want to spoil too much, because the way this game also works is that as you explore the wasteland and find treasure on the ground, whether it being on the surface, be it driving around the tank, which you can get out of and explore, just it's very dangerous if you do sometimes, or there's certain areas where you have to go underground and you're dungeon diving on foot. But when you find treasure, sometimes you'll find a treasure item that will increase a tech stat in the game. And every time your tech stat reaches a new level, you'll gain some new sort of function at the base, some of which actually kind of surprised me to realize that they actually provided to the game, which I don't really want to spoil, but maybe I should. Like, there's like a job system, which I didn't expect to exist, but there's a job system in the game. And which means you can like kind of learn new skills for your characters, some of which are better at working with tanks, some are better with working on foot, and you can kind of mix and match what you have. Have some skills pre-equipped so you can actually, you know, get the best of all worlds. There is a system, like a sort of an in-game achievement system, where as you perform achievements or goals, you get points and stats, which can then be applied to your characters in different fields, including hit point growth, different strength and weaponry, ability to find rare items, and so on and so forth. And all the characters share the points. They're called ace points, by the way. But say, for example, one challenge might be, I don't know, find 10 like quick travel locations. And once you find that many travel locations, boom, you get this number of points which you can acquire and allocate towards those stats I mentioned earlier.
That's pretty cool.
It's a pretty cool game. And I think as characters start to open up, the plot seems to be, it makes me curious as to wonder, like, you know, as they, because, you know, you already mentioned earlier about, you know, Noah did a thing. But in game, they kind of ease into that where it's like, we know this happened. We know these things are called suns, which are like giant weird mechs and whatnot. But I'm curious to see, like, I like the idea of like going forward and seeing, you know, learning more about the world itself and figuring out eventually, okay, so this is what's going on. Though the characters themselves are more like personalities. You don't really get to go deep into their histories and stuff like that, aside from like maybe some surface stuff. It's more about the world and their existence within the world, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because I enjoy the character interactions and I enjoy them discussing things like, oh, you're the last woman on Earth. You can't go out there. It's like, what the hell? I can't. What do you mean I can't go outside? And obviously, you know why they're concerned about that. Obviously. Exactly. But not for dirty, but for the actual population of the...
Yes, to save humanity.
Yes, but also that. but it's always, honestly, it's always enjoyable. I've been enjoying the game. It's legitimately quality. It's obviously coming out at a rough time in the RPG release schedule, though. What was it? We had Dragon Quest XI that just came out. You have, what's his face, coming around the corner, though. I guess that's not as much competition as like Dragon Quest Disgaea Complete, rather, I meant. Mm-hmm. And there's other games that people are trying to champion as far as being better than this game already. I've been kind of catching the buzz on the internet. And I tell those people to suck it. Yeah, I get Dragon Quest has a high profile, as it should. It earned that profile. But it doesn't mean you can't have a game ready and queued up to go when you finally tackle that beast. And I honestly nominate this game for that tackle, because it's an enjoyable product. And honestly, while I do have friends going, you're not playing Dragon Quest, catch up, man. I'm like, no, I'm reviewing games. I'm playing other games. I can't say I was begrudging playing this game. I enjoyed playing this game. It was not a quote-unquote sacrifice to leave Dragon Quest behind to play this game. I think it's good. And I think other people, knowing you have to, well, I should go into the follow-up, Bob. Or do you have any questions I didn't mention, actually?
I was going to say, is the soundtrack better than Dragon Quest? Because I still can't get over how bad Dragon Quest soundtrack is.
Well, I will say, I don't think Dragon Quest XI's OST is bad, though it isn't up to the standards of the previous games. I will say, this OST, if Dragon Quest has put you to sleep, this one will give you an energy boost and then some. Hard rocking music, and when boss fights kick in, the music is pumping. Like, nice. I want the OST for this game. It is legit works. I recommend the music, and I'm actually, don't be surprised. I'm like, hey, I need a new topic for Rhythm and Pixels. What's the topic? Tanks. Just to get the music on the show, because I really do enjoy the music in this game. It is quality work. And
tanks.
Tanks is the topic. How so? How specific, Parnell? Yeah, no reason. But like, well, the music is sick.
With it having a good soundtrack, overall $40 on this one. What do you think of it?
I would say it's definitely a buy it. just know going in, again, especially if you're coming out for, like, you know, the typical high-profile AAA products, you're not going to get AAA graphics here. You're going to get graphics that convey the world experience well and get you into the game without making you go, oh, gasps, or whatever the hell ever, you know. It's just an enjoyable game, and you take the game as it is and have a great time with it, and I think you won't be disappointed.
Awesome. I think you sold me on this game.
That means I did my job.
You did. You did do your job.
I did good. I'm proud of you. Thank you.
Speaking of tanks, there's another game with tanks in it that we could talk about. This is a preview of the game Bugs Must Die, developed and published by DG Games Workshop, coming to Steam later on this year. Do you want to live like a coward for a lifetime or live like a hero, even if only for a few minutes? Show your bravery in Bugs Must Die. Pernell, what is this game?
I think it's hilarious that they even conveyed that you had a choice to show your bravery. you gotta kill shit or else. Bugs Must Die, on the demo they provided, I was having a great time with it, and I was actually sad that the demo ended. I want more of this. I want to be able to, hopefully we'll get to review the full game, but based on the demo, I will say that if you like games like Jackal, and there was another game I played a couple years ago that was like Jackal called Renegade Ops.
Oh yeah, that game was awesome.
Yes, it was. It was one of the games where a friend of mine was like, you should try this. I'm like, I don't know, man. It looks kind of meh. And then we bought it together to play co-op, and we were obsessed with it. Like, we 100% of the game, to and co-op at that. And this game brought me back to that good time. So what, for those who are like, what the hell are those two games? Well, this game is like those, and the way it works is you are a vehicle of which you can select from multiple vehicles of varying stats. And you are being tasked with entering mission environments and killing a variety of insects, mantises, red mantises, mantises with cowboy hats, mantises with chain guns. It gets weird, man. Again, this is a demo, but it still gets pretty weird even in that. And you are tasked with murdering them all, sometimes for gold, sometimes because it just feels freaking good to do. There are also other objectives like rescuing, you know, like a, I guess like a docile mantis colony. And the way that works is you'll occasionally run across like containment units that you blow up. And when they escape, you pick them up. Also, there might be times you have to like pick up resources to cart them around. And those are just goals. But I'm sitting here not even talking about the thing that makes this game really awesome, which is the freaking combat. Your car is highly customizable. You get access to... You can purchase up to 5 different weapon slots to equip at a time, as well as multiple sub-weapon slots you can also equip. As you fight and kill bugs, you get gold coins and silver coins, which can be used to purchase new sub-weapons, new slots to equip new guns, which can be found as you're playing in the main levels. And something that's actually kind of surprising and cool with this kind of game, escape droids, or escape drones. So as you are driving around, blowing the shit out of things, if you happen to succumb to grim death, before you officially die, you enter an escape vehicle. This vehicle typically packs heavy firepower, but can't take more than one hit. So you, once you're driving that thing, you know all that risky play is dead and it's time to survive. Unfortunately, from what I noticed, though, what that also means is that if you're trying to rescue, I guess, like the mantis colonies, like I mentioned earlier, the escape vehicle prevents you from doing that. So while you'll be able to finish the level, you won't be able to fulfill the rescue objectives if the level has that sort of thing in it. But it's still pretty cool to be like, oh, down to my knickers. Let's get this thing done. It's like Ghosts and Goblins when the draws. It's really cool to deal with that. It's just a frantic, hectic pace of a game. You can get drones, which can fire bullets when you're not firing bullets. And you can pretty much equip them and let them run around the side of your tank. You typically can have select between multiple sub-weapons and main weapons at a time. It's a twin-stick shooter in a sense where driving with the left stick, aiming with the right stick, and then firing with whatever button you want to press. And there's a melee attack. I did not like the dash, which they gave you at the beginning, but they also gave you like a weird elongated buzzsaw, which was awesome to kill things with. The dash seems like it's more for maneuvering, because when I tried to actually run away from guys, it was getting me killed. Or run into guys, it was getting me killed. So, but it's a great game with some very imaginative functionality that seems to be coming through in the enemy content and the environments as well. They're not exactly like, you know, bursting with like secrets and like multi paths. But again, this is a demo. Maybe it will be like branching paths and stuff in the main game. But as it was in the demo, I got my fix of adrenaline bursting and I was sad to see it end. I want more. What did you think?
I didn't get to spend as much time with it as I would have liked, but the time I did spend with it, I thought it was fucking awesome. I knew that they said that it was inspired by Jackal, and I saw the influence right away with how it played, how it controlled. Twin stick fans are going to enjoy the game. Bullet hell fans are going to enjoy the game because some of those enemies shoot a ton of shit at you.
Yes, they do.
It looks good. It sounds good. It plays good. I am very excited to see more of this game. And personally, I hope we see it come to consoles as well.
Oh, God, yes. That's definitely been my thought. Like, I wanted it on a console yesterday. Like, it would be a very good switchy little title to run around with. Or just even on all the other consoles, too. But, of course, I'm getting really into the idea of, like, just picking it up and playing it wherever. But it would be really fitting on any of the three consoles at the present, I think.
So is this definitely something to keep an eye on?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I hope, honestly, that they keep us posted for when the final release comes out, too. Because it is something that I am interested in following up on once more is available to play.
Indeed. And so far, the only information I have is that it's coming to Steam Q4 2018. Hopefully that comes true. I don't have a price, so I'm not sure what it's going to run. But I think it's going to turn out to be a winner. It looks really cool.
It might cost mantis legs or a few eyeballs, maybe a few pips, some chode.
Oh, God. No. Oh, you.
Bastard.
Well, you got one more game to talk about. That is called Stay, developed by Abnormal's team, published by Rattlelake Games. It released September 13th on the Vita for $11.99. Stay is a nail-biting tale of abduction and isolation where every single second counts. A pixel art adventure game with multiple routes and endings. Your computer is tethered to a PC inside an abandoned home where an abducted man finds himself trapped and in desperate need of your help. Brunel, what happens?
I can't even tell you because anything I spare about this game as far as like a plot goes is a spoiler because it unravels itself as you go. But I can tell you about the experience, and the experience is probably unlike any game I've played that I can recall. So the idea is, again, this guy gets kidnapped and he's dumped in a room, and when he logs on the computer that's located inside, he starts talking to you, like you, the person, and it's essentially you in an AOL chat room, an AOL chat room or in a private messenger trying to talk this guy and keep him sane. And while it doesn't sound like the most intriguing of games, I gotta say, the writing of this guy is what takes it home. I really enjoy talking to this fake person. And as you are playing the game and you're talking to him, the game is keeping actual track of how long you've been playing the game and how long you've not been playing the game. What that means is something that I don't quite know. And the reason being is because I ain't want to find out. So I played, went to bed, woke up, went to work, came home, and just wouldn't turn the game on. Like, I didn't want to leave this dude alone. Because even when you come back, the game will show just how long you've been away, just how long you've been here. And when you come back, he actually hears that you log in. He sits back at the computer, and you have to outright, there's like a prompted response, but still, you have to outright say, "Oh, here, I'm back, man. Sorry, I had things to do." And you're like, kind of thinking, like, imagine this is a real person locked in a real basement. And you're like, "Oh, man, I know you're kind of in a situation, but I go to work. So I'll talk to you when I get it, when I put in my 8 hours." Like, it just, if this was real life, I'd feel freaking guilty. And being that it's a video game, I still felt a little guilty. But I'm not,
maybe it is real life. Maybe there really is someone on the other end.
Oh, God, that would be terrifying. Because this mess is rough. So it does a really good job of making you feel like he does, or kind of put you in his shoes, sort of, because as you're talking to him, the game manages a emotional state level, a trust level, and a bond level with this guy. So as you make responses, keep in mind, aside from like typing in your name, you can't like type out full responses, but when you come across situations, the game will like kind of prompt you with multiple statements, like typically two or three possible answers to give him. And you can see what all the answers are going to say. Like, you push the button with a general description, and then it'll show you typing out the message, and then you go to the other two and see or two or three and see the same thing. And then when you commit to the one you want, you send the message and he responds to you. And he keeps talking. He goes back and forth, back and forth. And sometimes he might leave the computer to either investigate something or just to do his own thing. And the do his own thing is a strange little component, because When that happens, the game will bring up a message that says interlude. And below interlude, it'll say leave at your own risk. I did not risk. I don't want to know what happens if I leave. So I sit there and I watch. And he'll like walk and you'll just watch him interact with the room. Like you have no input to what he does. He'll just do what he wants to do. It could take 5 minutes. I said, I won't say that much because I don't think it ever took 5 minutes. But it'll take a few minutes sometime. And you just have to watch and accept that this is what this poor man is going through, waiting to figure a way out of this puzzle. And then he might eventually come back and say, hey, you know, I had to clear my thoughts or I fell asleep on the couch. But here I am. Are you still there? Or sorry, I scared you off, whatnot. And you just have to keep talking to him. You have to kind of hopefully kind of balance his mood and his emotions and try to, you know, talk him. You know, I don't even want to say talk him through it because you could pretty much, you probably could just lead him to kill himself. I don't know. I wouldn't take that chance, so I don't know. But the answers seem to indicate that you could take him down the road of killing himself. I don't want to find that out because he seems like a legit dude. He's not even real, and he seems legit. Oh, and sometimes you have to solve puzzles. And it threw me for a loop because, let's say, for example, I'm making this up because I don't want to spoil anything. Let's just say, you know, the main character goes, I heard a noise. And he walks over and he goes, oh, my God, I found some popsicle sticks over there. Where did they come from? Maybe I should try to figure out maybe they were originally shaped like something because there's like dried glue on them. Maybe I can piece it back together. And you have to go, I don't know if you should do that. Or you can go, yeah, do it. Go for it. And when that happens, you would think that he just goes and does it. But no, you have to do it. The puzzle solving elements are things you have to do. So you'll be sitting there trying to piece things together or shift things around or manipulate stuff to eventually get to the solution to a puzzle, in which case it'll be as if he did it. He'll look at it and go, I did it. Here's the result. And like you'll start talking about if the puzzle resulted in some new clue as to how he got to where he is or why he got to where he is and stuff like that. And it gets to, he starts to get into really philosophical stuff and all kinds of stuff. Basically, what would you do if you were locked in a facility with no windows for an undetermined amount of time? Where would your brain go?
Damn.
His brain does that. And if I will say, if you're triggered by like isolation, you might not want to play this game because it does a great job of putting you in that position of like, I have no one and nowhere to go. Because in as far as this game is concerned, you're the only thing this dude has got. And if you fuck up, he's fucked. So it's weird. Like, you would think something like this wouldn't matter to me. I'm like, eh, it's just a video game, whatever. I'll get him killed and then laugh at the story or whatever. That's what some people think.
But it gets you emotionally invested in it.
Exactly. I actually care about this guy. I want him to escape. I want him to figure out why he's there. I genuinely was interested in seeing where it went. That to me is a sign of a quality product and how it's depicted, because this game could have easily been a dud to me. It, by virtue of what the game is, it could easily have been a dud, but I'm enjoying myself. It's like playing a narrative. So yeah, on one hand, it's not an action-y game and it's not that long, like a couple hours or so, but nothing like deep. But for what you're doing, which is experiencing this man's story and trying to help him get out, which essentially kind of makes it partly your story too, I think that justifies the cost of it being an adventure and an experience. It's like if Phoenix Wright was just one chapter and not four or five per game, would I have paid $15 for one chapter of Phoenix Wright? Probably. Maybe one of the later chapters, I'll admit. But I would have totally paid that much for one chapter of Phoenix Wright because I enjoy the experience and going down that road to see how it concludes. And I feel like this game has that number written for it too.
Well, then as it stands for $12, what is your verdict?
If you're an adventure man, you should definitely pick this up. Otherwise, if you've never tried like a narrative sort of game where it's mostly talking or reading, this might be one to give a shot to. It's not that expensive, and I'd say it's very unique for the genre and the style of game that it is.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. I might have to check this one out myself.
Yes. Oh, and I forgot to mention, the game does a good job of also rating your responses to stuff. Like, it's like, should I stay or should I go? You should stay, but do not go. You pick one or the other, and then the game will be like, hey, this many people decided to do this option. It'll be like a little interesting like tidbit that they wrote for that response. Like, this many people feel as though egg salad is delicious. What is wrong with those people? You know, something random, weird, random like that. But it's interesting. I enjoyed that component too.
Nice. Sounds like you had some good games, Purnell.
I really did. Don't give me bad ones, though I kind of want some bad ones, but I really don't. Time is precious, but I'm lucky to not have experienced anything yet.
One of these days we'll get you a stinker, just to hear what you say with a shitty game.
Actually, speaking of which, I think you'll appreciate this little side comment. So, on the podcast, I brought up the dialogue that we're having now, kind of, which is that I feel like bad games are rare to non-existent. And I was like proposing to friends, like, hey, what would you consider a bad game or something? You come across one, they would name games, but it was usually stuff that was, at least to me, games that are just like, okay, I don't like the way that, it'll be something ridiculous. Like, I didn't like this game because I thought the character was a little bit mopey. Like, that's not a bad game. That's just, you don't like the way they wrote the character. That's not a bad game. Like it did. It almost led to confirming what I said, which is that people will find reasons that a game is bad that don't necessarily constitute the game being bad. Just here's an aspect of it I didn't like, if that makes any sense. Yeah. It's like, I think Final Fantasy X is a good example of that, because again, I just mentioned the whole whiny characters. Like, I don't like Final Fantasy X. Why not? Because Tidus is a whiny. Okay, so, but the rest of the game plays very well. You just don't like Tidus's whininess. Yeah. See,
I hated 10, but I know I'm in the minority.
No, I think there's a lot of people that don't like 10. I've come across quite a few. But, like, to me, to dislike 10, for me, would have to come down to, like, mechanics. Like, I liked 10, but I'm making this as like a random example. If I was like, you know, the spirit grid was not a very competent means of which to level up your characters. I prefer to play games where leveling up constitutes actually getting experience points, seeing that number tick over to the next one, and seeing some stats go up. Not, you know, board game configuration. You know, that's a valid complaint. I feel as though I prefer turn-based battles with a set party, not one where you rotate characters in and out. I felt that it made the game feel clunky. It was not a proper design choice. You know, something like that. But Tidus was a whiny. Like, that's not a reason to hate the whole game. Final Fantasy VIII, I hate that main character, but that's not why I don't like Final Fantasy VIII.
No.
You know, like, it's stuff like that. You know, but I feel like it's just where we are lucky to live in an age where even if the bad games do exist, the odds of you coming across them, good freaking luck.
A lot of good and great stuff out there.
Yes, and I am thankful for that era, man. Kids these days don't know what we had to go through when Nintendo was getting very limited releases. It was a fair amount, but compared to now, it was borderline nothing. And you could easily wind up with quite the turd.
you could easily wind up with a Quest 64.
Yes, Quail Hedge. Like, this is the only RPG you have access to, and it's shit.
Oh, man. Well, Pernell, it is always good having you on chatting about shitty games and good games and mostly good games.
This game is the worst game I've ever played in my life. 7 out of 10.
Yeah, that's the age we're in nowadays. But
pretty much.
Oh, do you have any final words to wrap it up?
I'm just going to just tag this on there as my final words. If the scale is 1 out of 10 and you're rating worst games out of 7, guess what, buddy? Your 7's a 1. Get over yourself and learn how to use numbers properly. That's all I'm going to say about that.
All right, final game to talk about tonight is called Hover, developed by Midgard Studio and Fusty Game, published by Playdius, released September 18th on PS4, 19th on Xbox One, 20th on the Switch for $24.99. Experience the thrills of a fast-paced single and multiplayer parkour game. Join the rebellion and deride the security forces of an anti-leisure tyranny. Rise up to the many challenges of a futuristic open world, assemble your team, enhance your gear, and perform incredible tricks and combos. Checking this one out. Jacob Garner, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm recovering again because, you know, I've got kids. So this week it's the flu.
Nice.
And my youngest has an ear infection.
Nice.
Yep. And my wife also has flu.
So you're going to get me sick when you visit?
Probably not, because I'm actually going to be in Philly at the end of this week for my, you know, wonderful sideways promotion at work. And they're actually having me stay at a bed and breakfast overnight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty swanky. I'm excited. So, yeah. My wife isn't exactly thrilled that, you know, she's got the kids all by herself for a couple of days. But, you know, sacrifices. And she's not going to listen to this podcast, so, you know, I'm safe, you know, to say whatever I need to.
Except she's in the other room.
Yeah, but she's watching a Korean drama. Right, dear? Korean drama. Yay, Korean drama. Did you hear anything I said? Great. Love you. Don't listen to the podcast ever. She's going to listen. Wait, hey, so, that's another listener.
Yay! So how's Hover?
Do you like Jet Set Radio?
Yes. Who doesn't?
All right, cool. That's my review.
You got to give me a bit more than that.
All right. Pretty much, if you like Jet Set Radio, this is pretty much an insta-buy. So, all right, that's enough of that. So, for all non-Jet Set Radio, you know, playing listeners, hopefully, which is none of you, because everyone should have played Jet Set Radio by now. Mm-hmm. So, for everyone else, pretty much, you wake up in this cloning facility, which you have to escape from, and then you find out you're in this, like, mildly totalitarian government, which is also very futuristic, and like very consumerish and throws things at you with lots of advertisements and stuff like that, and fun is outlawed. So pretty much the whole gist of the story is you have to create a gang, meet up with some other people who will also, like, you know, join your gang and help you do stuff. And you do various missions, you do activities around the city, and you try to overthrow, you know, the main bad guy. The story's really not important. I'm gonna be honest with you. It's kind of paper thin. So if you're hoping for an amazing plot, it's not to be found here. What you're really getting is some really fun gameplay. Because you're gonna be it's kind of like Jet Set Radio and the fact that you're moving around quickly, but instead of skates, it's parkour. So you're running around all over the place. You can actually grind with your sneakers, but, you know, you're running, you're jumping, you're grinding, you're doing all sorts of tricks and stuff like that.
So there's some Sunset Overdrive thrown in there, huh?
I haven't played it yet.
You son of a bitch.
I can't, dude. I've got lots of games, like, on my Xbox One that, like, you know, Mass Effect was, like, my first, you know, thing to, like, get playing. And then pretty much it's just been, like, doing stuff for reviews and then shooting people in Just Cause 3.
You need to play Sunset Overdrive.
It's on my to-do list.
Well, move it, like, up.
But I'm still shooting people.
You could shoot people in that, too.
I know, but, like, I haven't, like, you know, I haven't freed the entire, like, country in Just Cause 3. Oh, I have to do that first.
Okay, so Hover.
Yes, so Hover. All right. So you're running around the city. There is a lot. In fact, I'd actually say it's a sensory overload, which is a plus and a minus for the game. Like, it looks fantastic. It's visually interesting, but there's going to be a lot of times where it's way too much. And the fact that the map in the game is pretty much one of the least helpful maps I've ever encountered. It makes navigating it difficult, but at the same time, there's plenty of missions where you're going to have to do races and you're going to have to, like, go from point A to point B, that kind of stuff. And eventually you'll start getting, like, you'll start figuring out the layout of everything. 'Cause you'll be like, oh, well, you know, I saw this earlier, and so I know how to get around this. But then, of course, other missions are just going to throw you completely for a curve, just because the place is so expansive. And then gameplay is interesting. Because it's hard to talk about this game without talking about Jet Set Radio a lot, because it's obvious where it draws a lot of its inspiration from. Visually, gameplay-wise, even music, because I think they actually got... I think they got the original composer to do a few tracks. Nice. For the soundtrack. Yeah, the soundtrack's pretty groovy. It's not as well put together as Jet Set Radio's, but it's got its own feel for it. It's not bad. Crud. What was I discussing?
I don't remember.
Running around the city.
That's right.
And so At the same time, the map's also going to lay out, oh, well, you need to talk to these, like, these people here, here, and here. And you will, but then it doesn't feel helpful, or, like, you're not sure what you're supposed to be completing with this person. And then, like, a lot of the times it's just, oh, well, do this mission for me, do this mission for me, do this mission for me. Okay, I'll help you out now. That kind of stuff. So, on top of that, the game also has two different play modes. You can play online or offline. Offline is pretty much just a single player mode by yourself. Online allows for other people to hop in throughout the world, and you'll see them almost to like the level of like I'd actually compare it to an MMO with that kind of online thing, because I had people running in and out of like, and just like all around the city, and like you just watch them and like they're running all over the place. I don't know how else to describe it. And it's not bad. Like it's like, it never felt obtrusive up until I had to do stuff like races, because the game, you know, obviously like if you're racing against like this other member of the, like, this gang who's like, I don't know if I should join you, you know, but if you beat me in this race, you know, I guess I'll help you out. That kind of stuff. So obviously you're supposed to be placing first, but like, let's say that you start up a race and then somebody who's online also jumps in. If that person who jumps in is the one that placed first, even if you place second, you still lose like that race against the person. And so, it can be fun to an extent, like if you know like who you're playing with, but if you've just got like random D-bags just running in and, you know, just causing a ruckus in the game, like it's actually going to screw up your game experience with it. So I ended up playing more offline than online. Although online wasn't bad, and supposedly we're going to get cross play too. With Xbox. I think it's like Xbox, Switch, and I think Steam are going to play together. I think that's what it is. And then PS4 and Steam can play together, but not, of course, you know, PS4.
Oh, will Sony, not... you assholes.
Yeah, of course. but I don't know if that got implemented yet. I don't know if that's for next month or something like that, because I had read an article from 2 weeks ago that said that it was coming. So there's that. And then, so as you move around the city and you complete objectives and stuff like that, you level up, and, also you can level up through doing tricks, AKA grinding.
Grinding.
So was that the first orgasm on the show, or what was
that? No, that was a groan.
Oh. Okay, I couldn't tell from you.
Anyway,
family-friendly show here. So, yeah, the only other thing is that... sorry. So going back to the whole grinding thing, by doing grinding and also, like, exploring the city, and sometimes you'll find loot bags and stuff like that, you get these chips which you can... upgrade your character, and it's like, oh, well, they'll be able to go, you know, X percentage faster, or they'll be able to jump a little bit higher and stuff like that, which can be helpful because the game does have some weird layouts of everything, and it's just like there's some areas where you think you should be able to jump and you can't, and, you know, upgrading your character will sometimes make it so you can. Other times it's just, I don't know, some parts of the city don't seem to be as well thought out as others. And yeah, the only other issue that I had with the game, is that it looks like it retained the menus from the PC version. And so you're using this very clunky, like, mouse kind of thing with your joystick, to select different things instead of just having, you know, the joystick select stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you actually have to move around a mouse to do it. Mm-hmm. And so navigating through the menus is incredibly slow. Why they put it out, like why it's being used on the console version, I have no idea, because it just doesn't work. I mean, it doesn't really detract from the game. It's just, I don't understand why it was done. Yeah. And it's definitely not a plus. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, well, minor gripes aside, $25 on this one. What do you think?
I'd be more okay with 20, like a straight 20 on it. But I thought it was a fairly solid game. If you're a fan of Jet Set Radio, like, this is definitely a game for you. If you're not a fan of Jet Set Radio, it's got some interesting stuff going for it, and I definitely recommend checking it out. But it's definitely, like, it's not a game for everybody. There's a lot of stuff that's involved with, like, reflexes and exploration of a city that's not exactly well laid out. So it can definitely get frustrating at times.
Cool.
So, yeah, so buy it.
Good stuff.
Yep.
Oh, that is it for this episode. Jacob, thanks for coming on, chatting. Thanks again to the Anodyne crew for coming on and talking about Anodyne and how awesome that game is. Everyone should go check that one out. That is it for this episode. Jacob, do you have any final words to end this thing?
Not really, but I must say I was really impressed with the timing of your Tron stuff on the last episode. You know, happy for those accident. Who don't, yeah, it really was. For those who don't read the Twitter or the Facebook page, what was it, 416? Was it 416? Yes. Was the last episode? Yeah, 416 launched on the day that the events of the movie Tron happen on, September 22nd. So, and of course, 416 had three songs from
Stemmage.
Thank you.
Dick.
From gee whiz, from Stemmage. from his Priority One album, which is Tron based. So that was a fun, happy accident. So, yeah,
that just shows how awesome I am.
It is. And also how awesome Tron is. If you haven't watched Tron, you should go watch both movies and then mourn that there will never be a third.
But I'm awesome too.
Yeah, okay.